This episode of the podcast is sponsored anonymously. Le'ila Nishmas, Menasha, Ben Reb Aryeh, Leibush Halevi, Tehenish Masai, Tsura B'Tsura Chaim. If anyone would like to sponsor an episode of the podcast, which is $360, please email me, farmchat@gmail.com, or in the show's notes, there's information via Zelle, Chase QuickPay, farmchat@gmail.com, or there's a PayPal link if as well. Also, if anyone would like to support the podcast, any amount, even a smaller amount, I appreciate it. Thank you to those that have. Please, you can use the same information. Also, if you could please subscribe to the podcast and rate and review on Apple Podcast, and you can subscribe Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, 24/6, and anywhere else. Just one small comment on this episode. This is about Rabbi Yisachar Pantin in his Darkei Gemara, Darkei Talmud. So it kind of loose, of course, relates to the Spanish series. It's a Spanish Gadol, and kind of around where we're situated in the Spanish series, a little bit earlier, but it's Talmidim go around this time. But again, this is not being released part of the series. It's a separate thing, and this really, we delved into the Sefer as opposed to historical context, and we didn't really discuss historical background. Rav Sacton put out the new edition through Feldheim, very nice edition. So we really discussed the Sefer and went into the edition. So hopefully this is interesting and enlightening for those that aren't familiar with it. And if you are familiar, hopefully you learned something new. And there'll be a link in the show's notes where you can purchase the Sefer. So thank you and enjoy the episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Sfarim Chatter podcast. On this episode of the podcast, I'm going to be joined by Rav David Sacton, who is a Ram in Diaspora Yeshiva in Yerushalayim, and we'll be discussing his new edition of the Sefer Darkei HaGemara, or Darkei HaTalmud, of Rabbi Yisachar Pantin, the one of the big Gedolim, the late Tkufas HaRishayim of Spain. And this is, he was a Rebbe of many Gedolim, late Rishayim, the early Achrayim, that Tkufa. He lived, I believe his years about 1360 to 1463. It seems like that's what it says on the Hebrew Wikipedia. It seems like he lived a very long life. And this is his Sefer that he explains, very classical Sefer, very important Sefer, explaining the Darkei HaGemara, and we'll be discussing that. So thank you, Rav Sacton, for joining me.
Very happy to be with you, Nachi.
So let's start off. Tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your background.
All right. Well, I came to Jerusalem. I grew up in Texas, actually. And I came to Jerusalem when I was a bocher in 1970 and became a Talmud of Rabbi Mordechai Goldstein Zatzal, Diaspora Yeshiva. And I stayed by him, learned by him for over 40 years until he was Niftar. I'm still a Ram in the Yeshiva there. And so all my interest in a method of learning came from him, and of course all my learning of Iyun Bekius. I give a shiur in Iyun and I give a shiur in Bekius to students, and I basically attribute everything I have to my Rosh Yeshiva, and he picked up on these books from his Rebbeim. It doesn't start with him. And so I'm continuing that Masoira.
So it's interesting you say you give a shiur in Ian and Bekias, and we'll talk about Darkei HaGemara. How does Darkei HaGemara work in Ian and Bekias, the Rabbi Yisachar Pantin Mahalach? We can talk about that a little bit also, because it's interesting. Your interest in Darkei HaGemara, also should mention you've done other Svarim on the Ramchal, Derech Tfunis and others of the Ramchal, and also in the Mahalach Halima. So this interest, and then the idea to publish a new edition based on manuscript with commentary, this comes from Rav Goldstein?
Well, he simply told us, you got to learn this book. And he taught it himself. He taught the book in the yeshiva, and editions we had were not always, they're not as thorough as the one I printed in the end. And I didn't print this book until the year after my Rosh Shiva's Niftar. But I basically went through with my Chavrusa decisions of how to go about it. And that's how I ended up doing a lot of work thoroughly to go through the primary important manuscript of the book. And so my edition is basically the first publication of that particular manuscript, the exclusion of everything else. Like I mentioned, there's other editions, scholarly editions drawn on many different manuscript sources. And when I decided I'm going to publish the book with a Peirush, I said, I have to have the best text of the book that I can without meddling in the thing myself. So I got the copy of the manuscript from the National Library and permission to publish it, and that was the basis of this book that I have now.
Yeah, I think you're right in the introduction. It's a British Museum manuscript, and actually it predates the censor. The Sefer was actually printed in Italy with the censor. That's why the name was changed to Darkei HaGemara. But in the manuscript, the real name of the Sefer is Darkei HaTalmud, but the Sefer is known as Darkei HaGemara, so you left it as it's known, although the Sefer itself, as you say, is based on that manuscript, and there also is an appendix at the end of Sefer Evan Arishin from Shmuel al Valensi, Valencia, Talmud of Rabbi Yitzchak Kampantain, and we can get to that at the end, Emirat Hashem. So let's talk briefly about Rabbi Yitzchak Kampantain himself and his biography as it pertains especially to the Sefer Darkei HaGemara.
Well, I think that we know that he had many Talmidim, and from his Talmidim came a lot of the early Achronim, including the Beis Yosef in Tzfat. They came from his Talmidim. So he was a very broad person and known to be basically the Gadol HaDor of his time. So we don't have, but we don't have from him anything books of on the Perushim, on the Gemara, or on Halacha. We don't have any. This one little book is all we have. So his contribution to future generations was this little Sefer, which is basically not very many books like it. I think the Ramchal is very similar, and he's generations later. But similar in the sense that they both took upon themselves, can I put in writing in a simple form how the Gemara is built? I'm not talking historically. I'm talking about from the point of view of the continuation of the Masorah and how we learn Gemara today. Well, where did all that come from? And we're falling into the soup in the middle. We don't know where we are. So the Darkei HaGemara is going to tell us from Aleph Beis where we are when we're learning Gemara.
Yeah, the Shlach Kaddish does as well. I think he's coming from Darkei HaGemara, though, a fair bit, if I recall. But he does this also.
Kaddish is actually one of the sources of the work, because he quoted in the section of Limud HaTalmud almost two-thirds of the book. And besides his Haskama to the Darkei HaGemara is one of the great sources about what does it mean to learn Gemara. The Chazon Ish, more recently, was a very big cluster with his book. During his lifetime, it was not in print. And he is the one who... The fairly recent edition of Miller from Bnei Brak and Petach Tikva, that people who were close to the Chazon Ish were responsible for that. And he was the one who told them, get this book printed for me. So in some of those editions, I have some quotes from the letters of the Chazon Ish that he put at the back of the book as like notes about Derech HaLimud that come from the Chazon Ish, and so I added that also in my edition. It came from the Petach Tikva edition of the Darkei HaGemara.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Sefer. You've mentioned already the Sefer is talking about, but let's talk a little more generally, and then we'll go through a little bit of, we'll go through, we'll try to the Sefer a little bit. And as you said, it's a small Sefer, it's very small. your edition has a commentary, there's an introduction and commentary and index, etc. But it's, in reality, it's a very small sefer.
It's not a big book.
Yeah, so what is the sefer trying to do? What was Rabbi Yitzchak Konstantin trying to do? What is the purpose of the sefer?
Well, on that one, I'm going to quote my Rosh Yeshiva Rabbi Mordechai Goldstein Zatzal. I think he had just a beautiful take on it. Imagine when we have the mitzvah Veis Lasos Hashem Hefer Torah Sech, and the Chazal wrote down the Torah Shebal Peh. And so the task is, first of all, to contain the information of the Torah Shebal Peh, which is almost without end. How do you contain it in a containable size of written material? I mean, okay, so our masifta and things like that are about three times as big as the regular shas, but to write down the Torah Shebal Peh is a very daunting task. So the main ingredient, according to my Rosh Yeshiva, is not only the content of the Torah Shebal Peh, but embedded in it is an instruction manual, how to go about it. In other words, the Torah Shebal Peh would not have built in a system of how it's going to be continued. So you have to think about Yiridus HaDoros and all the different people learning Gemara, and how are you going to make it that it doesn't just dry up? You want it to be able to continue forever. And now that was done on purpose. It's quite an amazing task. So the buzzword from my Rosh Yeshiva Zatzal is the Gemara itself has to teach us how to learn the Gemara. If the Gemara didn't tell us how to do it, how do we know how to do it? So that's the secret of the continuation over all the generations of our holy Talmud. Another thought I can add about that is a conversation I had with my publisher, Yaakov Feldheim, may he live and be well. But I was sitting in his office. He said to me, well, if you have a book to print and you come to me, so I want to know, who do you write that book for? So if you tell me, well, I wrote this book for everybody, I think it's a great book. But I want to know more practically, who's going to read your book? He said, no, this book is for everybody, young and old, and it's going to go. So he said, if anybody said that to me, I would throw them out of my office. But when we think about the Chazal, they wrote a Sefer Kodesh in such a way that it can be learned in every generation with understanding, with excitement. Imagine the very same book is being learned by the Rashba, by the Gaon of Vilna, and they find it to be very deep and very interesting. And then turn the clock of generations forward a little bit, and you have some children of our generation, beginning fourth grade, they open up Eilu Metzias, and here they are learning the Gemara. And they also find it interesting. They also find it exciting. Now, how could you write a book which is exciting and interesting and understandable for a fourth grade student who's just starting Gemara and for the Vilna Gaon? If you write it for a fourth grader, you'd think that the great rabbis would be bored out of their mind to learn such a book. And if you write it for them, you think these fourth graders will never understand a word. So the system of the Gemara is absolutely Baruch HaKodesh and totally beyond to imagine that such a thing is possible. So the purpose of the Darkei Gemara is to distill from the Gemara itself, how can I find the secrets that will help me to learn it, be excited about it, and understand it? And given that, of course, there's many levels and levels because the Torah has no end, but how do I understand it? So I'll give one example of what he did when I say the Gemara teaches us how to learn Gemara. A simple example from the opening chapter. He builds most of his principles on a certain language which is found in the Talmud. And so in the first chapter, one of the first ones he picked was a phrase, Hocha b'shuftani askinan, which translates basically, are we dealing with the simple and foolish people? Come on, we're dealing with intelligent, great people. So what does he make of this statement? The Gemara doesn't say this phrase very often. I think if you put it on a search, you'll find out it's two or three or four places in all of Shas. But he picked out that phrase and built on it a principle that our Chazal, the great rabbis in the Gemara, are highly intelligent, and everything they say is quite deep and requires a lot of thought in order to grasp what's going on. So he pulled that out of the phrase, look, we're not dealing with simple, plain people, idiots, or don't know too much. We're dealing with the great people who are quite deep and deep in their thinking. So when we realize that that's who we're dealing with, then it changes our whole approach to the Gemara. So so he goes step after step, pulling out these gems from the Gemara in order to explain to us, this is going to open for you a opening of how to go about it. And then he takes all these things and organizes them for us in the seven drachim.
So essentially,
seven ways of going into learning, which I'll discuss later with you whenever you'd like.
Yes, exactly. Essentially, it's an instruction manual on how do you learn. You pick up a Gemara, you pick up a Masechta. How do you read this Gemara? How do you read the Masechta? This is the Darkei Gemara. This is the instruction manual of how you should approach learning and learning. So let's start off in the beginning. Right. It starts off, important to point out, as we were talking before we started recording, and you mentioned this, that the manuscript that you use, the Sefer, has simanim, has chapters, but in your Sefer, there are very nice names of chapters with subheaders that you created. There are no names in the actual manuscript, but you created the name. So the first one, the first siman, as you call it, Psicha la Gemara, and it's a Psicha, an introduction. So as you mentioned anything there, so he has an introduction, and then he goes into the seven drachim, the seven ways, the seven mahalchim in Gemara. So if you want to mention something from the Psicha, an introduction, before we get into the seven drachim.
Be very happy to. First of all, I have to mention, only the title of the chapters is mine. But those little summaries at the beginning is actually in the manuscript. I saw from some scholar who said, oh, that's not Rabbi Yitzhak Confantum, that got added to where. I really couldn't care less. But those are in the manuscript and they're not my work. But the title itself is only what I put myself. So let me start with the Psicha la Gemara. Basically, the way I would define it is there are certain axiomatic principles of what Gemara is that if a person doesn't understand what Gemara is, then you'll be missing something when you start with the practical instructions because you don't know what you're dealing with. So the Psicha is basically to tell us what the Gemara is. And I think one point I would pull out of the Psicha is this idea that the Gemara is built on a system of a text written on top of another text. And actually, I wrote that this is also stated, besides in the Vayitzak Konfanton, the nature of a text and a perush on a text. It's also stated in the Thalia Talmud of Rav Shmuel Nagid in the back of Brachos. He says that from the very beginning of Torah Shebal Peh, that is in the generation of Moshe Rabbeinu teaching us the Torah Sheba'al Peh after he received it from Har Sinai and was kind enough to give it over to Klal Yisrael. So Shmuel Nagid says, from the very beginning, it had this form of Mishnah and Gemara. That is a text, and then an elaboration of another text on top of that, like a Mishnah and a Gemara. So the Mishnah, of course, before Rabbi Yudan Asi, was Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Omar Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Gemara, so to speak, everything was Baal Peh. But the Gemara, so to speak, was all the elaboration of the surahs and understanding of that form of Mishnah. So the basic entity of learning Gemara is a text on a text. And of course, as the generations go on, we keep adding to that pyramid because we have the Mishnah and the Gemara, then we have the Rishonim, then we have the Achronim. So the pyramid only gets bigger and bigger, but it's all a text on a text. That's I think, one of the most important characterizations of what Gemara is. The other one, like I mentioned, is from the language of Achim Mishutani Askinan, is how great and how deep are the rabbis of the Gemara in their thinking, and how much we have to appreciate both their deep thinking and their precise words. So those are all like basic axioms before you even start. And then after that, you get to, okay, if I have some idea what Gemara is, sounds very exciting, let's go for it. I'll just say one more principle that's from the opening of the Pticha is, I hate to mention this, but there's a word that nobody likes to hear. It's called hard work. And unfortunately or fortunately, that's built into the system. The Gemara takes work. And of course, you can make it easier by giving people signposts, by letting them know what we're about to do. But there's no substitute for sitting down and with thinking about it and doing the work to understand it. And the right side of that is that the work will definitely pay off, as the Chazal teaches him, Yagatu Matasa Tamin. So that's, I think that's enough for the Pticha. Now I'm ready for the practical side.
Yeah, and then he goes right into the practical side. Derech HaLimud B'Shiva Drachim, which is, I'll let you talk about this, but right away there's Derech HaRishon, explains every mimer, you have to see who's talking, Miha Medaber, Miha Meshiv, Miha Makshel, Yashoyel, that's the first part, then you see the main issues, but I'll let you go on and explain, in brief mention what the seven are, and then obviously that's really the second chapter, and then continuing throughout the Sefer, Rabbi Yitzchak continues elaborating on these seven drachim, these seven mahalchim in the Gemara.
Yes, I've explained that the book is very organized. You have a pticha that, like the axioms, you have to know what you're talking about before you even start, and then you have the core program of seven drachim, seven ways. He characterizes them in the beginning of chapter two. These are seven paths. Everybody that learns Gemara, without exception, the simplest student, the greatest ilui, nobody can avoid going through the same channels. Just some people do it quicker, some do it slower, but everybody has to go through these seven paths. Everybody has to walk down these seven paths. So now that's the statement of purpose of the book. Then the middle chapters, up until 14, 3 to 14, are all elaboration on the seven paths or seven ways of practical learning. And then the concluding part of the book, chapter 14, is an analysis of the actual buzzwords or the most common words that are your signposts when you learn the Gemara. Very valuable thing to know about. And like I say, on the idea that the Gemara teaches us how to learn Gemara, so it's no mistake about it that the Gemara has certain languages that you see over and over again, and they are our signposts. They're helping us how to get through the work ahead of us. So that's an overview of the book, and now let me go into the seven drachim, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the seven drachim, I printed them in the front cover of the book in an order which I think is I stole from the Ramchal to do this, but it's also based on the Yitzhakan von Tom, and how he set up the seven drachim in the chapters of the book. But I would say the beginning and end is what I would call the system of Shachavataria, back and forth, May and Bay of the Gemara. So one is, like you mentioned, the opening of the seven drachim is to know what each statement does, and then a little bit further in, he tells us in the second derech, what are the two sides of the whole debate going on? There's a shakavataria, but the when I rearrange the seven on the front cover of the book, it looks like this. There's a list of seven key things to do. So I put them in the order I think is practical. One is, when you have a shakavataria, you have to ask yourself, well, are there two basic sides of a question here? What are the it might be a 3-4 kashas and a teirus that get rejected, another teirus instead of that one. But the different the kashas on this way and that way and the rayas, basically it comes down to a fundamental question with two sides, and there's a debate going on, and we start from an opening move and then go back and forth in this debate until we come to the conclusion of the sugya to know where we end up. So that's the one of the seven drachim that I put first in the book. I think it's number two. The last one of the seven is simple, is shachavatari on a simple level of what's the kasha, what's the teres, what's the raya, what's the stira, what does each statement in the sugya actually do? What's the purpose? So here, the Ramchal helps me out a little bit, because you'd think that should be the simplest one, is just to know what each statement does. That's shachavataria. But it's actually the two-sided understanding is a little more basic, and the moves are a little more they're simple on the surface, but much more complex when you look into it, because there's a progression of what comes first, what comes second. First this kasha, then this teretz. Then before I give another teretz, I ask another kasha back on that, and then I come back over here. Back and forth, different statements with a purpose. So following the line of those statements one after the other is can get a little bit complicated. You have to keep track where you are constantly, and the more you go further, the more you have to get your bearings where you are. Otherwise, you'll become lost in the sugya. So the following step by step is actually in some ways harder than defining more abstractly the concepts, the two sides of the debate. Those are two out of the seven drachim. I say in Shachavatari, you have one, which is the two-sided debate, and one is the actual purpose of every statement. I think the next step in the seven is these three. What's the Chiddush of the Chazal? What's the underlying Svara of that statement or Chiddush? And when you have different opinions, so find me a chilek between the different ideas that makes the difference to explain why there should be such a machlokes like that. I'm saying this very briefly, but basically the chiddush of the Chazal and then the underlying reasons, which can be involve a lot of investigation in the sugya before I get to them, and then the nature of the Gemara having been built upon machlokes of different opinions, and then there's a basic understanding that each opinion recognizes and understands the other, and said, "Why don't you agree with him? If he has such an intelligent and profound idea, why do you have to be Marbe Machlokes Bisroel? Why don't you just agree with your colleague and not have to disagree? You disagree for the sake of having a good debate." So on that, I say there must be a chiluk. There must be an essential difference between the two views. And focusing in on that is a very deep level of doing the work in the sugya. So if I put those three together, the chiddush, what's the new idea being presented? What's behind it? What's the top? What's the reason for it? And where is the difference between the different opinions that drives the whole argument between them? Those three, together with the first two of Shachla V'Tari, I'm up to five. So I have only two left. The last two of the seven drachim is two different systems of making diukim. And when I talk about diukim or inferences, diukim are a big mystery. A lot of times people don't really know where you're coming from when you medayik something in a Gemara text. It kind of feels like you're pulling a rabbit out of the hat. But in order to understand the inferences of the Gemara, so I think I'll give this introduction. It's a little bit also from chapter one, and the Ramchal elaborates on it even more. But there's a basic idea. If I go back to the thought that the Chazal wants to put the Tor Shebaal into a concise written form in an easy language, in a system that can be learned by everybody of all levels in every generation. Well, one of the first things you have to do is you just cannot say everything. You have to leave some things to be understood by the reader, by the listener, by the student. So that's the basis of diukim. They say what they say. They say it very carefully in order to imply that there's maybe other things going on here, which I didn't have to tell you. I didn't have to spell it out. I expect you're going to think about it and get there. So the last two drachim of the seven drachim is how do you make an inference? And I'll just say briefly what they are. I think to use the language of the Gemara, you have the machlokes of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmoel in the Midos Shator Nidreshes Behem. The drushes of the are actually how to learn the psukim with the extending from the psukim. How do I derive the laws of the Torah? So there's two systems, basically. Rabbi Yishmoel, in the Brisa that we say every morning, is basically built upon klal and prat. That is to say, in every pasuk I'm looking for, where is a general concept and where there are detailed concepts. And when I go from klal to prat or prat to klal, then I have room for inferences. When I say, well, I said this particular instance, but of course you know that I mean to include in the more parts of the general rule. This was just an instance of it, and I want to extend it beyond that to include more things in it. That's called klal and prat, an individual case and a more generalized case. There's many, many details of how those inferences are built. Rabbi Akiva, on the other hand, learns based upon primarily ribui and miut, not klal and prat. And so klal and prat had a general category of laws and a specific law, and Rabbi Akiva is from one thing, I extend it and expand it to another realm or to the more laws related to the first one. That's called ribui or extension. And the other principle is to contract or memaye. In other words, when the Torah says something, am I supposed to understand the Chiddush is only here? This is it? And don't think it goes anywhere else. This is a big Chiddush only here. Sometimes they say the opposite. Sometimes they say, it says it here in order to tell you everywhere that this is the principle. Sometimes I expand. Sometimes I contract. So in the seven drachim, those two systems of where inferences come from general and specific laws, or from expanding and contracting on the given laws of the Torah, those are the last two of the seven drachim. So sum up, I have two in the field of Shachlu Ataria. I have three in the field of understanding what the great rabbis have told us and their disagreements between them. And that's two and then three. And then the last two, inferences. So that's the seven drachim. And then after he explained them in chapter two, of course, all the middle part of the book is details about that. And I've had people who tell me that they don't understand these connections, but I believe that when he tells us these are the seven paths that everybody has to go down, then he's not going to tell me, well, there's actually another 10 more, which I'll bring you when I write the rest of the book, you'll see there's a lot more things to do. So it really would be much more effective if everything else fits into these, because he said these are inclusive of everything. So that's why I organized the book that way. I don't think I'll go into detail on the middle chapters, brief overview of the seven drachim gives us an idea of what we're doing when we actually learn. We are following the May and Bay of the Gemara. We are delving into the depths of the words of the Chazal. What is the new idea that they're proposing, and where does it come from? What's the reason for it, and why would anybody disagree if it's such a great idea? And finally, it's impossible to communicate to us all the laws of the Torah Shebaal Peh, the Halacha, in a way which does not include things which are implicitly understood but not explicitly stated. And I'll just say a story about the Ketzos HaChoshen. Wrote a parish on the Shulchan Aruch that in his introduction, he says this, that, it was a terrible thing to publish a Shulchan Aruch as you're going to give the final word on all the laws of the Torah. So I, the Ketzos, came along. I decided to throw in a monkey wrench. And I'm going to reopen the topics and show you that those simple laws in each little sif of the Shulchan Aruch are actually quite deep and have a lot of implicit understanding to be expanded upon. So if you make the mistake of thinking that the Rambam or the Shulchan Aruch came to put in the final word, and that's what the Torah is. Well, the Ketzos and the other great Achronim and Rishonim come along to tell us, well, there's a lot more to it, because what they say has a lot of implicit meanings, which you can't understand the halachas without going deeply into those inferences. Okay, so that's seven drachim in a short form.
Yeah, very, very short form. And even though it's a short sefer, it's something you have to read and understand. And that's why you have your notes and commentary, which we can talk about. I just want to mention, I opened up the random chapter. I want to mention a little bit. You said, well, we're not going to really discuss the middle chapters. And we'll be here for hours going through the sefer. But I will just mention.
How about BK?
He does go through, there are examples, either generalized examples where he explains the Gemara does X and Y, and the Gemara brings such Lashonis, and this is what it means. Sometimes he even goes further. I'll just open to random one, I'll read a little bit, none of you can follow. I'm just picking this on the fly, we didn't print this before, but Simon Vavi says, what you write, Inni Machlekes Bein HaChachamim. So he says, when you see in the Gemara, two Tanaim Amaraim arguing with each other. So, there's two reasons. One is a siba, which is why they're arguing. And the second thing, he calls it pre or nafkuso itachlis. Right? There's the outcome, ledina. What's the actual practical difference? And then he continues that you have to know to find what's the siba, and why are each one not wanting to say like the other one? And then he brings an example. I think that's why I want to point out. He brings examples. He brings a mashal from the Gemara Baba Kama. Everybody probably knows Arba Avos Nezik. And one of them is Mava. So the Gemara says, my Mava. Rav Amar Mav is Adam. Mav is Adam. Dichsev, and he brings a pasuk. Shmuel v'chulu. Shmuel Amar Mav is Hashem. Dichsev v'chulu. Rav, and then the Gemara continues. Rav, my time lamer k'shmuel. V'shmuel, my time lamer k'rav. Balzen nemer v'tamad. And then Rabbi Yitzchak Kompanta continues. B'may k'miflegi, which is saying, Mahi asibam nivlam lachlik. Why are they arguing? Masvara yesh lechal echon mehem. And then he continues. V'asibah lepamam yesvara a pasuk. Sometimes one is a svara, one is a pasuk. That each one he has a reason or has pasuk specific to him that he holds of, and that's why. Din, or he has a din. But Talaimar, Sibas, Machalas, and then it continues. I'm just bringing this to point out so you can see a little bit of the example. He goes in depth and he walks you through. This is what it would mean. This is what you have to know. Here's an example. And he walks through continuously. I don't know if you have anything to comment on that one. You don't need to, or if you want to comment on the other ones, but that's somewhat of an example of a middle chapter. And there's more there that I just wanted to bring out
I'd be happy to. First of all, where does this belong in the seven drachim? Very exciting chapter, as you mentioned, because machlokes in the Gemara is the name of the game. Everybody's always talking about, Abaya says this and Rabba says that and Shmuel says this and Rav says that, and but the Darke Gemara puts this into the framework of the seven drachim. I have to know what's the real difference between those two opinions. I can't just say, well, he makes sense. The other guy, I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me, I think that's a pretty stupid idea. But we know that everything they say is quite deep. Now, if it is, and it's they have a reason and a force for what they're saying. So in the end, how could they disagree? How could they disagree? How come there could be like such a difference of opinion like that? So this chapter is really helping us like get between all those dilemmas of wait a minute, if he said this, how come he said that? How do you get through all those moves and end up with a clear understanding of a machlokes in the Chazal? And this is all part of the fourth derech of the seven drachim of find a chilik that makes a difference. Find me the pivotal point between the two great rabbis. So I'll give a simpler example than Rav and Shmuel. In the very beginning of Gittin, it's something I think everybody learned. Rabba says, I'll tell you why you got to stay a Befana when you bring a get in, because over there they don't know about Lishmo so much. So that's why you got to say b'fanei nechtav in the beginning of the Mishnah, and Rava says no, come on, that has nothing to do with it. The reason is because when you travel so far, you're never going to get Adim to mekayim the shtar, and you're going to be in big trouble if you don't mekayim the shtar. Who knows what will happen after that? The poor lady, someone could question if she's able to really be married. So I have a machlekes of Rabba and Rava. The Gemara explicitly does each one of these steps of the Darkei Gemara in over there at the beginning of Gittin. They first ask, my time. What's the? There has to be a reason. You have a Mishnah that says say the magic word. This get was written and signed in my presence. Well, why? What's the reason? So if I don't have a reason to explain the difference of opinion, so then I don't have a difference of opinion. On the other hand, if I have a reason of why one rabbi says this, why the other rabbi says that, I say, listen, I could talk about that till I'm blue, but it's philosophy. Tell me a practical difference. I need to know what comes out of that. So the Gemara right away in the beginning it says, my beinayu, with the nafkamina. And when you get to Rabba and Rava in Daf Gimel, just one page later, then we say, we don't have the word that's quoted in here, Rabba, my time, Alomaka Rava, but we have the same idea because each one is going to bring the Hechrach for his position. So those are the three parts, the reason for a machlekes, the practical difference, and the proof that each one has of why I don't say like the other one. And between those three, I kind of digest them together, I'll come up with the pivotal point of the machlekes called the chiluk between the views of the Chachamim. It's a system that works. And I'll just mention one more thing about because the two basic ideas is there's a chiddush and a hechrach. And when you say a Torah law, and I say, well, I know that already. You're not telling me anything I don't know. So he said, this is something new that it's necessary for me to teach it to you. So I say, new? New? You say it's a new idea? Well, halashosim in HaTorah. We don't have new ideas. What's this? So you have to tell me where you got it from. What's your hechrach? Where's the source? And then you tell me the source, and then I'm going to jump back on you and say, well, if that's how you know it, then anybody could figure it out. So it's not a new idea anymore. So now I'm caught in a dilemma. Is it new and exciting, something not learned from any place else? Or is it something, and then it has no source? I say, then I don't need it. I need to know what the Torah teaches me. Or if I have a source, then I say, well, then tell me what's new about it. So when you get caught in that dilemma and find the golden path through it, then you'll come up to the true core of what's being said, or the pivotal point, the chiluk of a machlokes in the Chazal. So that's basically where this is a expanding on the one on those three middle part of the seven drachim of how to understand the new ideas of the rabbis, how to understand why they could possibly argue, and to understand what's the reason for their arguments and what's the force, what makes them say what they say.
Now, afterwards, so again, there's much more you can go through. The you know, everyone should go through the Sefer, and the 14th chapter is Darkei Lashonis HaTalmudis. So Rabbi Yitzchak, as again using your header, where he goes through various Lashonis, which is im isa les naha my shire the high shire, famous, you know, chesuri mechsera hachi ketani hachi kamar. He explains the difference between hachi nami mistabro or dekanami dektani. You have zeaklal asuye mai eludvarim minyan alimute mai. What's coming to mai? You know, and on and on. Ketzad or lamad over doima lefikach or hilkach. He tries many a lot of the times. There are differences. The Gemara uses a different word. It's not the same lefikach or hilkach. You can talk about some of that. These are kind of overarching, more language type things.
Yes. Well, what's it doing here? I basically finished with the seven drachim at this point in the book. And so I think I'm, so to speak, going back to basics, that if the Gemara is going to have embedded in it the secret instruction manual, So the place where that really is in these key words that the Gemara uses over and over again. Each one is used to tell us like a principle of how to think in the way that the Chazal is really instructing us and teaching us. When you're dealing with a halakhic problem, how are you supposed to think about it? So the instructions how to think come from all these details. So the main thing I added to them, and I did not change the order, but I looked at the order of these long list of terms and tried to group them into categories of, well, this group of words, it's doing a certain function. So I wanted to generalize and explain, here's a certain function that's being done. And then there's a few variations of how to go about it. And I'll just add one more thing about the key words of the Gemara is Rabbi Yitzhak Konfanton wrote at the end of chapter 8 that just like the words of our great rabbis, you have to think twice exactly what they mean. You can't just take it on face value without thinking into it if it makes sense to you and how to understand. And then he adds an interesting thing. He says, and the standard buzzwords language of the Talmud, you also have to think, what do they mean? In other words, don't take it for granted that these words, even if they occur over and over and over again, mean the same thing every place you see them. There might be a general meaning what they mean, but if there's an exception, don't be caught off guard, because you don't have, they're not like just computerized, program words. They're thinking words. So he cautions us in chapter 8, long before he got to 14, don't get caught off guard if these words are used in an unusual manner. But after when I opened chapter 14, so I basically asked myself, well, this is a very long list, and is there any rhyme or reason? Is there any systematic about it? And I think the answer, Baruch Hashem, is yes, there is. He goes in order of a certain approach. What do I need these words for? And I put these categories basically into my margin notes next to the paragraph. So he opens chapter 14 with everything connected to understanding the Mishnah and the Braisa. That is to say, in the Gemara, you have kind of, it's not just Mishnah and Gemara, but you have also Braisa. So therefore, you have mixed up a little bit the Torah's Tanoim and the Torah's Amoroim. So there's certain languages which are there to help us organize our understanding of the Tanoim in particular as a starting point. So then that's the first group. Then there's another group after that dealing with how did the Amoroim position themselves in relation to the Tanoim. Then by looking on through chapter 14 and my side notes to get these categories, the next one is it looks like it's going into some detail of, but it's talking about ribu and miut, about inferences of when do I expand, when do I contract the understanding of the text. This is very important for both the Tanoim and the Amoroim. So I have to do this as a group by itself. So those languages, La Suye Mai, La Fuke Mai, Minyana Limute Mai, Lefikach, those are all dealing with inferences. Fourth group, defining categories. When I'm summing up the Amoroyim, so I need to know where do I define their halakhic categories. And so there's another group of classic words of the Gemara that tell me what's in the box, what's out of the box. Afalpi. Well, it looks like it's out of the box, but it's really in the box. Lo mi boy. I don't need to tell you this because it's obviously part of the same category. So that's another whole group by itself of understanding the halakhic categories that are dealt with by the Amoroyim. And I could go on and on, but the next group, which is the biggest ones, I'll end off with this and that, go into more detail. The fifth group, which is basically half the chapter, is words of the Gemara, which are the signposts in the Shach Levetaria between the Amoroyim. And these is a very long list. Languages of Kasha, languages of Teres, Haimai, Elohaki Komar, Hagufa Kasha, Haki Nami Mistavra, Pshita. These are all signposts in Shach Levetaria. And it takes up half the chapter. And there's also, I made some breakdown into categories here too, which I won't take your time to spell them all out. But basically, I think as a conclusion to the book after the seven drachim, and after looking into the deeper understanding of walking down these seven different paths in every different part of the Gemara that I learned. So then there's back to the Gemara teaches us how to learn Gemara. And one of the main ways the Gemara teaches us how to think is by using these repeated buzzwords.
Yeah, and I think the last chapter to explain is about Hava Mina Maskana, explain the importance of Maskana. And I think it's important to also mention the end of this, especially here on the Sfarim Chatter podcast, is how he ends the Sefer is very important to mention. And he says, "Ein chokhmas adam magas ela admakim shesfarav magiyan." A person only has chokhmas until he has his svarim. Ulechein, therefore, yimkur adam kol ma sheyesh lo v'yikna svarim. He should sell everything he has and buy svarim. Ki derech mashal, give an example. Mi she'ein le sifrei a Talmud. If someone doesn't have a Talmud, he efshel leilias baki, but you can't be a baki gemara if you don't have a gemara. But you don't have medical books and other things, you can't know it. Pirush Rashi Zal, and he brings Masech to Avis. Knelecha Chaver, Chaver Mamish, V'yesh Aymrim Sfarim. Zakti Bizakon Pantin says, Ki Asefer Hu Chaver Toiv, Asefer is a good friend. V'akara B'Sfarim, Shualim Hu B'chlal, V'yuchayecha Tulim L'chami Neged, M'yishayesh L'Sfarim, Heim Ha'mivim, Oysel L'dei Chachmo V'das, He really ends off a real plug for Sfarim. And remembering this is a time when he was really writing.
That's a pretty good push, right?
Yeah, no. He was writing at a time where he mainly had manuscripts and different things. And even in the beginning of print, Sfarim were very expensive. But still, this is still as he's writing. If you have Sfarim, you know how you know things. If you don't have Sfarim, you don't, you don't
imagine,
know.
Imagine his time buying books than buying manuscripts.
Yeah,
and there were professional sofrim to write out copies of books, but it wasn't simple to own books. And of course, in our generation, there's so many books coming out of our ears, we don't know where to begin. but I think the LTD is basically, even in our time when books are so available, I think the key idea is we have to value them. It doesn't help to pile up your shelves with books. You have to value the books. And if you do that, you'll inevitably gain a lot of chokhmah, and it's almost impossible to get the chokhmah without them.
Yeah. Now, also, but that's the end of really Donkey Kong end. We didn't, there's much more to discuss. But then you added on a small, it's almost a chapter, even though it's like a own little work. Ha'evan Harishin from Rashmul Al Valensi is Talmud. So why'd you add that here? And just in brief, what is that about?
Okay. This is written by a Talmud, and it's Torah from Yitzhak Anfanton, and is not exactly on the same line of thinking of how does the Gemara teach us how to learn Gemara. This is really a Lavdish discussion about the logic of Kal v'chomer. And I'll mention Machlokes Rishonim, basically between Yitzhak Anfanton on the one hand and the Halichas Olam on the other hand, that when the Gemara has a Binyan Av based on two different places, I make a Binyan Av. So I learn a certain law from some place where it's Beferish, I learn it to another place, and I say, oh, that can't be. There's something not similar between those things. How can you learn one from the other? They say, well, I'll learn the same thing from a different place. I say, well, yeah, I can't learn it from there because there's something not the same. So then I say, well, I'll put the two together and make a Binyan Mishnei Ksuvim. So the problem with that is if the first one didn't do the job and the second one did not do the job, well, two zeros don't add up to one. How do you get it to work? And the same thing is true about Kal v'chomer, where the Gemara has a Kal v'chomer then a Kal v'chomer the other way and a Pircha that way, and then they say v'chozer adin. So the one of the explanations of chozer adin is that the circle goes around and around and never stops, and therefore you'll never end up with a decisive pircha to remove your deduction. But Rabbi Yitzhak Anfanton doesn't learn that way. It goes around forever and you never get out of it. Therefore, you never have a solid rejection. He learns chozer adin means that after the Kal v'chomer, after another Kal v'chomer, appears in the opposite way, and then you come back, he learns that the whole idea is to bring back the original Kal v'chomer to its original strength, chozer adin le'itano. It comes back to its full strength, and then you have a solid limud. It's not just, the other way is kind of by default, you can't remove it because you're just going to keep on going around in circles forever. You're never going to be able to remove the limud. Therefore, it has to be true. But if the Anfanton says, no, you can come to a solid proof by saying the back and forth doesn't go on forever. It brings us back to a deeper understanding of the first Kal v'chomer, and everything in the end then stands. This is a very lavdish sugya of how Kal v'chomer is built. And the one thing I would recommend in this little work of Rav Valensi is he gives a beautiful example of a Kal v'chomer based on like a mashal, a story of different people, and it makes it very easy to grasp the thinking process because you're thinking about simple facts. So he has three people named Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. One of them is blessed with sufficient parnasa. One of them is a hard time with his job, but at least he has a roof over his head. The guy with a good job, he's paying rent. But so there's different milas. The person has a roof over his head. There's another fellow named Shimon who has parnasa, and the third one has siyata d'shmaya. So now I start reasoning back and forth between them. Well, if he has the rule over it, he has the rule over it, but he doesn't have a good parnasa, but he has tiyata d'shmaya. So it must be that he has a good parnasa as well. How could he not? He has tiyata d'shmaya. So they say he learned from Kal v'chomer. Say, no, but the guy with tiyata d'shmaya, he doesn't own a house. So therefore, he doesn't have a good parnasa. So he goes back and forth with this simple mashal, and he tells me that really every Kal v'chomer, I'm talking about a certain subject matter. The subject matter I'll call the Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, and a certain Torah law that he's chayav to pay this money, or he's chayav to bring this korban, or he's potter, or this is osur, this is mutter, different laws. So the laws are, Reuven has a law called owning a house. Shimon has a law called making a living. Levi has a law called having siyata d'shmaya, and somehow he pulls through. So to redefine the different, when all these debates of Torah laws, to define the subject and the law in simple terms, like this fellow and this is what Hashem gives him, that's a subject and a law. So this allows me to analyze very deeply the whole process of reasoning by Kal v'chomer from one to the other. So that's really the topic is, I've just explained from the outside a little bit what's going on. It's a very deep topic. And to the book, I would say, Yadir Torah v'Yadir, that here I have something outside of the Dark and Gemara that comes from Rabbi Yitzhak Kanfenton. And since I don't have anything else, I'm thrilled to have this. And so since the writer of the manuscript that I based my book on, he was kind enough to include this text at the end of the manuscript. So I said it deserves to get published together with the book.
So that's why you included it. And it's a small little thing in the back. I also want to mention you also have there's a Lishna de Talmuda, so it's, you know, small kind of index. You also included Ksas Darkei Iyon LaChazanish. You mentioned earlier the Chazanish's interest in Iyon and in this, so that you mentioned, I think that's, you have, that's, I think it's counting how many Zion, and then you have Maftechas. Now, I want to mention something about your commentary. So first of all, the Sefer, as you said, you used the manuscript, you made it fully menuked, and include this in the text. But what you did interestingly was your commentary, so there's two different types. You have two types, Haggis Levi, and you have Tvunot. Now, there's two, it's like two columns. I'll let you explain what the difference is between the two. Why do that? I do also, another thing about the notes is they're not on the bottom of each page. So each chapter is the chapter, and then there are letters or numbers corresponding to the commentary. One commentary is with numbers, one is with Isis. But it's not on the bottom of the page. I don't know if you got that. Yeah, I don't know. This is like the Sefer Rav Chashmaitza and Shev Shmaitza.
I have a reason for that.
That's Rabbi Baruch Ber Leibowitz Haskamer from Chaim Shmuel Lapian, Rabbi Lapian's son, Rishiv in Sunderland in England. He told him, you shouldn't write your commentary in the bottom of the, why are you writing it on the bottom of the Sefer? So is that why you moved it to the end? Is that you didn't put it on the bottom of the page?
I'll tell you why I did it. It's basically based on one of the ideas in the Dark and Gemara that the essential structure of the Torah Shebaal Peh is a text on a text. So one of the things he says there in the first chapter is, don't read the Gemara and right away read the Rashi with the Gemara. Rashi is not a pair of crutches to help you read the Gemara. Rashi is a parish on the Gemara. So read the Gemara by itself. Try to understand it. After you understand the Gemara by itself, then read Rashi. What will happen? You are guaranteed to jump up and down with a tremendous new insight. Guaranteed. How are you guaranteed to have a Chiddush? This is all a quote from the first parak. He says, well, there's only two possibilities. Either you'll read Rashi and you'll find out that Rashi says more or less how you understood. Then I say, okay, but if I understood that without Rashi, then Chita, why'd Rashi have to say it? So when you delve into the Rashi a second time, you'll find a tremendous chiddush in what Rashi had to say, that it's not just a cliff notes to explain the Gemara. I could read the Gemara, I got it without Rashi. So Rashi must be telling me something much deeper. And what if Rashi doesn't agree with you? You're also guaranteed to get a chiddush, because then you have to ask yourself, well, how I understood the Gemara, it's a logical possibility, but Rashi must have had a good reason why he rejected it. So let me think about that, and I'll come up with a chiddush in understanding Rashi. So it's a win-win situation. So that's what I mean when I say the Torah Shebaal Peh, in its essence, is a text on a text. So I found, I thought about this, if I wrote my perush on the bottom, it might take up too much of the page, and then you won't read the Darkei Gemara so easily. Whereas if I have all the chapter in order without a perush, then it encourages people to read the book before you read the perush. And then I didn't want to put the perush like a separate book at the back of the whole book, because then I would be afraid no one's going to get there. So I decided to compromise. Each chapter, then a perush. That way, I think in the system of how to learn the book, I can advise people, read Rabbi Yitzchak. You don't need me. If you understand him, or you understand him differently, or you like to go a little deeper in how you understand what he said, then Lonius Daiti, try out what I had to offer and see if you gain from that. So that's how I organized it, with the chapter and then the perush. I can also answer the other question a little bit. Why did I divide the perush into two parts? Because in the book itself, I find that Rabbi Yitzchak Kaufman is doing two basic things. He's telling me principle, and then he's giving me Gemara examples. By the way, in my perush on the Ramchal, I did the same thing. I have Hagosli B on the principles of what the author is telling me, and then I have Tefunos to the understanding of the examples. And each example really gets a fuller understanding of the principle. Of course, comes from examples. So I break it up like that. That when reading the book, I look for just tell me the principle he's saying before he gives an example of it. What is the principle? And maybe that needs some elaboration to explain more clearly what is the underlying principle that he's outlining for us. That's the perush of Hagosli B. And then when he gets to a Gemara example, then I ask myself, why is that Gemara an example of that principle? And needs to be explained. Divide the perush into two parts.
So, first of all, I will link the sefer in the show's notes. Also, let me ask you, the other your svarim of Ram. So, this is Feld, published by Feldheim, as you said. Your other svarim that you published on the Ramchal, are those still available?
I have a English translation of the Ramchal, which is available. It's English facing page Hebrew with a lot of explanation in English. That one is available. I have a Hebrew perush of Hagosli B'Tfunot, which is actually out of print, and I didn't just run it through again because it's more than 20 years old, and I'm in the middle of working through the perush again. So that's really my current writing project, is to renew the perush of Hagosli B'Tfunot Ramchal. But in the meantime, what's available in the stores is the Derech, it's called Derech HaKodesh, the three books of the Ramchal, Derech Tfunot, Sefer HaHigayon, and Sefer Melitza. In English, I call them Ways of Reason, Book of Logic, the Book of Words. So those are available in English, in a large single volume in English from Feldheim. And the Hebrew Ramchal is available with some introduction and side notes, but without the whole commentary, which I'm trying to redo. Uh, So the Ramchal, I hope to make it more available than it is today.
So I'll link that Derech HaKadosh as well. Let me ask you this to close. You mentioned earlier when you met with Feldheim, they asked you who's the safer for, who's going to read it. So of course it's somewhat for everyone. Everyone learns Gemara, but who is it for? Let me ask you here. And who do you intend your addition for? And who do you think you should learn the Sefer Derech HaGemara of Yitzchak Kampantan?
Well, I think any Gemara students on any level can get some benefit from the book. And basically, I would say high school and Kollel level is a little more thorough that they can benefit from everything there. But my experience in teaching a method of learning is, especially the Ramchal, in the English Ramchal, I divided it into units of study that I find that if I'm dealing with the grade school Gemara beginners, I can take one or two of those units and spend a whole long time with them on that, and they'll gain tremendously. I wouldn't try to throw the whole book at them because it's too much. But I think my basic audience is anybody that wants to improve their level of Gemara learning, they have what to gain. And so I would just caution beginners that don't expect to get the whole Torah on one foot. Find something that you relate to and work on that part. Then later on, come back to it, work on a different part. But if somebody's an experienced Gemara learner, then I say, read it. And I'll tell you the difference between the books is for people with a more yeshivish background, Darkei Gemara is definitely more accessible than the Ramchal. The Ramchal is in a certain way more philosophical, but he's extremely thorough and deep in his analysis of the Gemara, but the language is more difficult. So one of the main challenges I have in writing about it is how to make it more accessible. But in short, I think that for yeshiva students, I would recommend Darkei Gemara first and the Ramchal afterwards. And for people that are not as familiar with Gemara, the Ramchal actually is more basic, but he's so complete in his system that I would say don't try to swallow it all in one bite. Start with the parts of Derech Tefunos before you get to the other books in the Ramchal. If for someone who's not so experienced in learning, but basically the whole reason why my Rosh Hashiva pushed us to learn this, that I've been dedicated it for very, very many years. My first publication of the Ramchal was in 1989, so it's been quite a few years. My main interest is, if you want to be excited about learning, and that's really the name of the game, you have to know how it's done. And these books are a tremendous key. And of course, you have modern authors, tons of good advice about how to go about learning. But the only drawback is, do they have a complete system? And do they have the authority equal to the Ramchal and Rabbi Yitzchak Kanfanton? So I think these books are winners on that score. And it's work to get them, but each one is like a gold mine. It's every bit of work which is invested pays off.
Okay, so thank you very much for joining me to discuss Darkei Gemara, Darkei Talmud of Yitzchak Kanfanton. And like I said, I'll link in the show's notes. if anyone is interested in purchasing it. Also, it should be available in Sfarim stores. Both, and the Ramchal Sefer should be available in local Sfarim stores for those interested. So thank you again.
Yeah, they are available. The only one which is not is from 20 years ago, I have a Hagosli P on the Tefunot on the Ramchal, which is out of print.
Okay. So thank you again, Rav Sachton, for joining me.
They have also a lot of tapes of Shirim on the books. If you want, I'll send you a link to tapes that you could put that in there somewhere too.
Perfect. Yes, please send the link. I'll add that to the show's notes as well. So perfect.
And as far as the books, it's look up the Ramchal and Yitzhak Kantone in Feldheim's catalog, and you'll find it there.
Okay, terrific.
Okay, thank you so much, Nachi. I really appreciate it. I'm very happy to meet you.
Likewise, thank you.